You're with Chris Smith on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, good to have your company. Now, I have been saying to you just before the news, I have been telling you that the sanctions that have been applied to Iran by Joe Biden as a result of what they did last weekend and their drone and missile strike. Well, as you would have heard in the news bulletins, and this is very important, Israel has now hit back at Iran. Let me tell you what we now know. US officials have told American broadcasters US-Israeli missiles had hit an Iranian site in a move that could quickly escalate into a major regional conflict. The Fars News Agency reported explosions in Isfahan near an Iranian Air Force base as Iran activated its air defense system over several cities and closed its airspace. Iran's air defense has been activated in the skies of several provinces of the country, according to the official IRNA news agency. The ABC, CBS, and CNN cited US officials confirming the strikes were from Israel, but did not confirm their locations. But explosions were also reported at an airport in Syria and Iraq. IRNA reported two airports and a radar battalion in southern Syria were targeted. The Sabrin agency linked to pro-Iranian militias in Syria also claimed that Israeli strikes had hit radar positions in southern Syria. So this is not a singular site. These are multiple sites in multiple territories and multiple countries as a retaliation for the missile and drone strike that occurred from Iran and aimed at Israeli territory, which of course were combated. The Supreme National Security Council of Iran has called an emergency meeting over the strike. Now, you know what has been going on leading up to this strike has been a threat by Iran that they would fire certain weaponry that they have never used before. The imputation is that they will somehow explode a nuclear bomb. There are some experts who say they are not nuclear armed, but they could fire a dirty bomb that might wipe out sections of the Middle East. That's what they have threatened to do if Israel strikes. Israel has now struck at these locations. The ball is now in Iran's court. Have we got, now that we've had two strikes against each other, do we not have a full-scale war between Israel and Iran? I would have thought the answer to that is yes. Israel has repeatedly warned it would retaliate against Iran's drone and missile strike at the weekend, but recently suggested an attack would not come before the end of Passover on April 30. Well, they told porkies. They told lies. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu warned US and European leaders who had urged restraint that Israel will make its own decision. Earlier, a senior Iranian official warned that Iran could work on building nuclear weapons if Israel attacks its nuclear facilities in retaliation for the drone and missile strike Tehran launched against Israel last weekend. What else can I tell you about this? Let me give you a little bit more information from another source. Washington was pre-warned that Israel planned to strike Iran within 24 to 48 hours, according to multiple US media sites. US officials told Bloomberg, Reuters, and CNN Israel gave the US advance notification of the strike on Thursday, with CNN reporting the US did not endorse the strike. The US did not endorse the strike. US Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin spoke with Israeli Minister of Defense on Thursday about regional threats and Iran's destabilizing actions in the Middle East. The Pentagon readout does not mention any discussion of Israel's plans to attack. There are little bits and pieces coming in as well, but I want to check them before I give you the information. But there you have it. As you heard in our news, we've already had Israel deciding to strike once again. They did so, of course, against the Iranian embassy in Damascus. That was the reason for last weekend's drone and missile attack by Iran, which was aimed at Israeli territory, but it didn't make it. And now Israel has struck back. Where does this go from here? Where does this go? Do they have a dirty bomb that they can release? Does this escalate into a regional conflict far bigger than what we've been watching in Gaza? Far bigger. And who does that bring in? Does it bring in the UK? Does it bring in the United States to form some kind of alliance with Israel? Although this is something that both the UK and the United States warned Benjamin Netanyahu not to do. So does he become internationally isolated and therefore can only fight off an unknown Iran on their own? That is the latest information coming to us. And this is Chris Smith on TNT. All right, let's move on now. I do want to talk a little bit about environment right now. And we'll get you updated information that I will get you as soon as possible from Israel and also from Iran. The Iran news agencies are reporting on various things, but I will get you additional information every 10 minutes right here on TNT. Now, according to legacy media, Australia's Great Barrier Reef is in big trouble. How many times have we heard that? The headlines yesterday from Media Worldwide said it all. From The Guardian, quote, "Extreme coral bleaching could spell worst summers in record for Great Barrier Reef," authority says. That's a headline. From The Washington Post, "Most of Australia's Great Barrier Reef is suffering from coral bleaching." From Al Jazeera, "Australia's Great Barrier Reef suffers worst bleaching on record." From the Sydney Morning Herald, "The map that reveals the shocking extent of Great Barrier Reef coral bleaching." These news headlines are a reaction to the latest alarmist report released by the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority, the Australian Institute of Marine Science and the CSIRO. Should we be alarmed at all of this? That's their aim, of course, to be alarmed and probably to get people thinking about reducing CO2, which apparently will save the planet. Or is this just all about global boiling and a scare campaign? My next guest will provide his expert analysis. Dr. Peter Ridd is a geophysicist with over 100 publications and 35 years' experience working on the Great Barrier Reef. And he developed a wide range of world-first optical and electronic instruments for measuring environmental conditions near corals and other ecosystems. He was head of physics at James Cook University for over a decade before being fired in 2018 for questioning the quality assurance systems used by reef science institutions. He joins me live from Brisbane in Queensland. Peter Ridd, welcome to TNT.
Thanks very much.
The Reef Snapshot 2023-24 report claims, quote, "The recent global pattern of extreme heat driven by climate change has adversely affected many coral reefs globally, including the Great Barrier Reef." Is there any truth to this, or is this just utter nonsense?
There's truth in the sense that a bit of coral is bleached, like it does quite often, but it's just a massive exaggeration about how much of the coral will die. We just heard this again and again and again. They said that 93% of the reef had bleached in 2016, which is actually even more than what they're saying this time. But actually, very little of that coral died. Interestingly, they're not mentioning in any of these reports that in 2022-2023, measurements by the same group, the Australian Institute of Marine Science, showed that the Great Barrier Reef had record amounts of coral. It never had more since records had begun, twice as much as what we had in 2012 after a few cyclones wiped out a lot of the coral. And astonishingly, the type of coral that we've now got ridiculous amounts of is the type that they claim is most susceptible to the hot water bleaching. So, you know, why did they not mention that we've got so much coral? They just mentioned the bad stuff. What you're seeing here is the total corruption of science done by a wide range of organisations. And truly, we should be worrying about far more important things than the death of a little coral, which will recover quite remarkably in a very, very short period of time.
Give us some quantitative understanding of what we're talking about here. How much of the reef is in danger then?
Zero. The Great Barrier Reef is not in danger. It's as simple as that. We have not lost a single reef of the 3,000 reefs of the Great Barrier Reef. We haven't lost a single one since Captain Cook came up. We can tell that because every one of the reef platforms is still there and covered with great coral. You know, if we, in 2016-17, we might have lost 8% of the coral, but it totally grew back. Remember that we've had a almost 300% increase in coral between 2012 and 2022.
Okay. So none at all. So isn't this just about swings and roundabouts in a normal environmental pattern?
Yeah, it is. It's like a bushfire in the Australian scrub. You know, you get a bushfire, you lose a few trees, they grow back, it looks bad. In this case, it's not even as bad as that, because most of those corals, they go, some of them go white, some of them go actually spectacular bluey, reddy colours, and then they get better after maybe a few months, maybe less than that. So what we're seeing here is just the natural thing that's been literally going on with corals for hundreds of millions of years. But it's, of course, a great opportunity to talk about catastrophism. It means you've got to, you know, not use your car. We can't burn coal. We've got to control your life and what you eat. It's just a mechanism by which these utterly corrupt institutions have become ideological and political. And something has got to, we need to do something about them to bring these science institutions and make them reliable again, because they sure as heck aren't at the moment.
It's almost as if, Peter, that we've created in recent decades a climate change industrial complex. And I mean that by which it is so large and all-encompassing that everyone within the coral area, within the scientific area related to geology and other aspects of science, have all clubbed together to create this industrial complex where they all get on the same page.
Precisely. That's exactly what's happened. There is huge ideology. There's huge personal benefit for the scientists who who make these ridiculous claims. I estimate that in Australia, the amount of money that's spent to save the Great Barrier Reef that goes to all the science institutions and the management institutions, you're talking, it's hard to estimate because the tentacles are through all parts of government, but probably $500 million a year is roughly what it is. Now, you divide that and work out how many people's livelihoods depend on the Great Barrier Reef dying, not too far in the future, because that would be inconvenient. They'd lose their jobs, in the next 30 years. And remember, this has been going on for 60 years. I remember when I was a child growing up in North Queensland, where I live, the reef was dying then, and it's been dying every few years since then. It just keeps on going. And there's a lot of people whose livelihoods depend on that ridiculous proposition.
That's one thing, to start telling us porkies about the state of these areas of reefs within the Great Barrier Reef. But it's another thing to start blaming climate change for it as well. It's almost a separate issue. I want to talk about that issue and what's being raised here with you in just a short moment. I've got to take a break. Peter Ridd, Professor Peter Ridd, is my guest right now. We'll take a break right here on TNT.
TNT's Rick Munn.
The US have provided assurances to prevent Julian Assange's appeal against extradition. So the death penalty will not be imposed, they said, but WikiLeaks founder's wife, Stella Assange, said he will not be afforded First Amendment protections. So last month, two judges deferred a decision on whether Assange, who is trying to avoid being prosecuted in the US on espionage charges, clearly relating to the publication of thousands of classified documents that they say endanger life, and so on and so forth. So bottom line is here, the US government have said, pinky promise, we won't put him to death when he gets there. Yeah, that's a little bit like if a crocodile could talk, or a great white could talk, and you're on a surfboard and you're thinking of going into the ocean for a little dip, and he said, don't worry, I won't bite.
Locked and Loaded with Rick Munn on today's News Talk TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. there are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
Right. I've got cancer. I've been trying to tell the rest of you, but no one's listening. And I don't just mean you, ears. Eyes. Would you look in the damn toilet for once? Hands, roll those sleeves and take a sample. And legs, trot off to the doctor to get me looked at. Because bowel cancer can be successfully treated when detected early. Now look who's finally woken up.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I do a lot of streaming radio.
I do a lot of free streaming.
TNTradio.live.
All right. I have got Peter Reed with me right now. As part of this report that we're talking about, Peter, it lists the four key stresses on coral reefs. They say above average sea temperatures, cyclones and storms, flood plumes, and crown of thorns starfish. What is your assessment of each of these four points? Can we start with average sea temperatures?
Not a problem, actually. The corals grow much faster in warmer water. So for every degree increase in temperature of the water, you can expect your corals to grow between 20 and actually even up to 40% faster. So that is not a big issue. And this is one of the crazy things. Why are they using coral reefs as the poster child for climate change, when in fact, of all the organisms on Earth, these are the ones best able to deal with a warming climate?
Okay, let's talk about flood plumes.
Absolutely no effect whatsoever. I mean, I've done a lot of work on the effect of flood plumes myself, and they essentially barely get out to the reef. They get out in very low concentrations. They carry almost no pollutants of any significance at all. They're just not a thing.
Cyclones and storms. I have a feeling that we've had a lower number of cyclones and storms in the northern part of Australia than we've had in recent years.
We had two cyclones go through. Cyclones kill more coral than any other thing at all, but they're completely natural. It's been going on since forever, since the Great Barrier Reef started. So, yes, we've had two relatively small storms compared with, say, Cyclone Yasi, which was, 2011 or something. Where we lost vast amounts of coral, the two storms we've had this year are not really a big deal.
What about crown of thorn starfish?
They certainly eat a lot of coral, but they've always eaten a lot of coral. A lot of people don't realise they're a native Australian animal. There's no evidence to suggest that they're any worse than before European settlement. We know by taking geological cores of the reefs that those have been around for thousands of years. So essentially, the Great Barrier Reef is one of the most pristine, unspoilt places on Earth. You really cannot find, I don't think, any better place on Earth. And yet somehow we've managed to convince the whole world that it's almost completely stuffed, totally damaging the North Queensland tourist industry. But most importantly, telling a whole bunch of children all over the world that, you know, it's all over, the world is ending, Great Barrier Reef will be gone, as will everything else. People are losing hope. It's just a ridiculous thing that we're doing based on actually the most pristine ecosystem in the world.
It's not only ridiculous, it is just disgraceful. And then they go on to say, the Great Barrier Reef urgently requires our protection through reduced carbon emissions, water conservation, and the avoidance of pollutants. This includes ways to reduce your consumption habits by transforming your transport, walk, ride, or use an electric vehicle, rein in your power use at home and in the workplace, and reduce food waste. And I guess when we do that, we can run off to the Great Barrier Reef and there'll be twice as much coral there. Right, Peter?
Oh, no, it will still be dead. It doesn't matter what you do. The reef is going to have to be still dying in 20 years' time. Otherwise, they'll run out of work, won't they?
Don't corals thrive in warmer temperatures anyway?
Yeah, they do. This is what I was mentioning before. If you go the Southern Great Barrier Reef, the corals grow about half as fast as they do. Well, a little more than half as fast as they do on the northern Great Barrier Reef. If you then go north into Papua New Guinea and Thailand, the same corals will be growing twice as fast as they do in the southern part of the Great Barrier Reef. Now, I'm down here in the deep south in Brisbane. There's corals in Moreton Bay. The corals grow very slowly there because it's not warm enough. If we got a bit of climate change and got another couple of degrees, those corals would grow much, much faster.
That's what we need. We need a couple of degrees. If you can organise that, Peter, it'd be fantastic for those coral reefs.
Precisely. I mean, if you could, I mean, obviously we can't because we can't change the climate that easily. But if you had to say, is warm good or bad for corals, you'd say it's a good thing for corals. And that's why I don't understand. You know, they say, well, the polar bears are all being eliminated. Yeah, and that's due to climate change because polar bears don't like a warm climate. That would sort of make sense, except for the fact that polar bears are actually increasing in numbers too.
Yes.
But it would kind of make sense. But with corals, they like it hot and they can deal with changing temperatures extremely well. I could talk about how bleaching is actually an adaptive response mechanism to be able to deal with changing climates. They're actually changing the symbiotic algae that's living in them when they're doing the bleaching. It's actually to deal with a slightly warmer water temperature in that particular year.
Let me ask you one last question. What's the bet, given the fact that we've got a federal election coming up at the start of next year, what's the bet that between now and then, because of this report, the likes of the Great Barrier Reef Marine Park Authority, the Australian Institute of Marine Science and the CSIRO get really big, fat wads of money for their research to save the Great Barrier Reef, Peter?
Pretty high. But if you just spent $5 or $10 million doing a science quality audit to actually hold these guys to account, you'd be able to bring them down pretty quickly. And that's what I want to see happen. We need science quality audits because the scientific institutions have become corrupt and untrustworthy.
Well said. It's fantastic to have you on the program as usual. Thank you very much for your analysis, Peter.
Thanks very much.
Much appreciated. Professor Peter Reid. You heard what he said. The guy has spent almost a lifetime studying the Great Barrier Reef. There are swings and roundabouts when it comes to the environment. In some areas of the world, things grow well, they don't grow well elsewhere, et cetera, et cetera. There are natural phenomena in terms of weather that advantage coral reefs. Then all of a sudden, in the years later, they'll disadvantage a coral reef like the Great Barrier Reef. Swings and roundabouts is what the weather presents to the natural environment. And we've got to understand that. You heard what Peter Reid said. Maybe what we needed was a really independent, if you could possibly get that from the science community, a really independent audit of the kinds of misleading reports that we see, like the one that we saw earlier this week. But I doubt whether they'd be prepared to do that because they mightn't want to know the truth. Let's take a break with all of that. I'll give you some more detail of what we can get from Iran and Israel from the Middle East in terms of this attack by Israel on Iran. Right now, let's go to the newsroom on TNT.
Big news?
We do have some big news.
TNT Radio News.
Big news.
Matt Boyland here with your TNT headlines. Israel has launched a limited strike against Iran in response to its retaliatory airstrikes over the weekend. The Bank of America is warning a direct war between Israel and Iran could send oil prices soaring to $130 a barrel. Over 100 university students protesting Israel's war in Gaza have been arrested in dramatic scenes at a campus in New York. And South America's Argentina has applied to become a new global partner of NATO.
The common housefly, caught in the clutches of the spider's web. Every move it makes just makes matters worse. Then, dinner time.
Feast on the captivating stories, videos, and helpful information on our website.
Whoa. Dinner's ready.
Oh, man.
Escape is futile.
Just one more video.
Get stuck in our web.
TNTradio.live.
Let's get back to the program. I want to give you a little bit more information on what we can ascertain has occurred from an attack by Israel, not only on a major military site by the sound of it in Iran, but other sites in the Middle East. The cause, and let me start at the top of this particular report, which comes from Bloomberg. Israel launched a missile strike on Iran less than a week after Tehran's rocket and drone barrage, according to two US officials. An explosion was heard on Friday in Iran's central city of Isfahan, the country's semi-official Fars news agency reported, as concerns mounted about Israeli retaliation. Flights were suspended in Isfahan and the Iranian cities of Tehran and Shiraz, as well as at airports across the country's western borders. What we can say, the cause and details of the blast are unknown. It is believed to have been one of several launch sites for Iran's April 13 attack. That was the site at Isfahan. Israel officials had notified the US earlier on Thursday that they plan to retaliate in the next 24 to 48 hours, according to two US officials. Brent crude jumped above $90 a barrel, and gold surged past $2,700 an ounce on the reports of this attack. US bond yields fell across the curve, with the 10-year yield down 10 basis points at 4.53%. When you have major tremors like that on the stock market, that is an indication that people think you're about to enter another war. That's what I've got from additionally from what I've been able to ascertain in the last few moments. Bear in mind that I'm also broadcasting at the moment, so it's a little bit hard to search and talk at the same time. I wanted to get to the campaign director for the One Nation Party right now, Craig Kelly. There's lots more happening in Australia, and let's cover it right now. Craig, welcome back to TNT.
Hey, great to be with you again, Chris.
I've got to start with this own goal by this EV fast charging company, Tritium. It has collapsed. It's insolvent. The administrators have been called in, but this mob was the Prime Minister's EV poster child, wasn't it?
Correct. Albanese had been there many times. This was the future, he kept on telling us. The future is right here. We've seen what the future was for manufacturing under Albanese government. This company tried to relocate to Tennessee in the USA. They closed down their manufacturing in Brisbane, but unfortunately it was too late. They burnt through $2 billion US dollars worth of market capitalization that they had.
Wow.
I had a look a couple of days ago. $2 billion had gone down to about $3 million. So like a 99% decline in the share price. That's now, the shares are now worth nothing. This is a very sad day for all those people involved. But it just shows how difficult it is to manufacture in this country when we don't have competitive electricity prices.
Yeah.
Albanese, you know, all this madness of net zero. You know, we tell, oh, renewables are cheaper. The most expensive electricity in this country is in South Australia, which just coincidentally has the most renewables. Like in Tennessee, where they were trying to relocate, the cost of electricity in Tennessee, the retail cost, is about 11 to 12 US cents a kilowatt hour. Now, that equates to about 16, 17 Australian cents a kilowatt hour. In Brisbane, the default market offer is 50 cents.
Wow.
So in Brisbane, the cost of electricity is three times higher than what it is in Tennessee.
This is the greatest own goal, economic own goal we've ever scored in the history of Australian government, isn't it?
Look, this is not only just a one-off case. You've also seen Qnos, the big plastics manufacturer here down in Sydney, also in Melbourne, also basically selling up and closing their doors. We've got businesses going, closing their doors one after the other because they can't get competitive energy in this country. And you've got Albanese government with this net zero madness and this destructive lunatic Chris Bowen running around the place, pushing up prices even higher, wasting billions of dollars on just fanciful things. Chris, the economy is in a really, really bad way.
Yeah, yeah. And in areas that the government keeps saying is the future of the country, which makes it even worse. Now, I wanted to move on to the monthly migration intake. I couldn't believe what you posted on X yesterday, but we've actually exceeded 100,000 for a month in terms of migration for the first time in Australian history.
Yeah, well, Chris, this is official. I'm not making this stuff up. This is the official Australian Bureau of Statistics numbers. 100,000 new migrants, new people into this country in the month of February. The first time ever we've gotten over 100,000. Remember, now before the year 2000, from the Second World War until the year 2000, we were averaging 80,000 a year migrants. That created pressures in the country, but we managed them. That made the successful country we are. We now have 100,000 in a month, and not, you know, the month of February, which normally has, because it's a short month, normally has the lowest numbers. And the reason why this is being done, Chris, is because the economy is in decline. Real GDP per capita, we are in a recession when you measure it by GDP per capita. Going backwards, the last three quarters have been negative growth. So Albanese has to mask over that by importing, I said, 100,000 people in February saying, oh, look how wonderful I am. I'm growing the economy. Look at all these jobs that I've created. It's not only fake, it's making things worse. It's making the problem of the unintended consequences of this Ponzi scheme of massive migration is causing real hardship and pain in the country. And it's actually making the economy spiral downwards even further.
Yeah, very true. I wonder what the link is then to what we heard today in the Australian newspaper, that the hospital system is at breaking point.
Well, what do you expect? You import record numbers of new people into the country. You know, we can't even build the houses that we need, let alone the hospitals. let alone the hospitals that we've got. So what happens? The queues at the public hospitals just get longer and longer and longer. And it just means more pressure on Australians. Our lifestyles go down. You know, the message is don't get sick. Because if you get stuck in a public hospital, who knows how long the wait list will be.
This Julie Inman Grant, the e-safety commissioner, is a real worry if you ask me. Firstly, she's unelected. But boy, oh boy, isn't she having a hand in the things that Australians in the past have watched and absorbed on media, and all of a sudden things that we have ordinarily seen from news incidents are off limits and we can't publish them.
Well, Chris, firstly, this woman was imported by Malcolm Turnbull from America, a former disgruntled Twitter employee. I think the worst possible person you could have picked for the job. She was there off in Davos telling everyone that Australia doesn't, I don't have to abide by the First Amendment. I'm old, even though I'm American. Australia doesn't have to abide by the First Amendment because they don't have it. America does.
Yeah.
So she's not only wants to censor what she deems as misinformation, they now want to go further and censor the truth and the facts that they deem uncomfortable or inconvenient.
See, we've always had a rule, especially on primetime media, especially the 6 o'clock newses, for instance, where things that were gratuitous would never be shown.
Yes.
But I don't think seeing a terror attack where someone lunges at a bishop is gratuitous. We need to see that and know that it occurred and how it occurred. We need to see what went on in Bondi without having to see the gore and the gratuitous stabbing. We didn't see that. But why can't we be privy to what's actually factually happening?
Well, because they want us to live in a nanny state, Chris, and it's an inconvenient truth as to what happened. Look, these things have to be – people can use their own discretion. We're adults. We can decide what we want to see and what we can't see. And if we're going to have a true debate about Islamic extremism in this country, what happened needs to be shown and discussed.
Yeah.
I'll give you an analogy. Going back to the Vietnam War, there's that iconic photograph of that young girl running down the streets, 90-year-old girl, naked, being burnt from napalm.
Very graphic.
Right now, very graphic, but that changes people's opinion, right? Yeah. Are you saying that should, is she saying this, Inman Grant, saying if that happened today?
She would.
So how can you have a proper debate about the Vietnam War if that is censored in the public?
Yeah.
This is why you've got to, you know, you can't err on the side of censorship. And this is, and remember, what happened to the bishop, it wasn't a, no one was killed. In terms of graphic violence, any video game that you play, go and see today, is 10 times more graphic the what yeah, that was.
Of course. Billboard Chris from Canada, who I've spoken to on the program before and has been speaking to one of my colleagues here at TNT this week, is using the Free Speech Union of Australia, pro bono, to challenge the validity of what this woman is doing. He says, I'm sure the eSafety office will use some of their $42.5 million budget to fight my appeal, but that just means they're spending money, which has already been allocated for censorship, to show the world how they're trying to control what Australians can see and say. Good on him.
Remember, she couldn't do this in America. So with the American First Amendment, she couldn't do this, but she's here in Australia lecturing to Australians about what we can and cannot see, when in America, under with their First Amendment, she wouldn't have those powers. Mm. And they wanted, and Albanese wants to give this woman more powers to censor stuff with this missing disinformation. No, look, it is in completely the wrong direction that we need to be going. We need to be protecting and valuing free speech. We saw what happened during COVID. Much of the disaster and the tragedy of COVID was the result of the censorship of free speech. We had frontline doctors, highly experienced medical professionals that were banned and censored from Facebook and Twitter, where we should have been listening to their opinions instead of these clown show medical bureaucrats we have that got it wrong time after time after time. And it took so long to fix the problem because free open debate was being censored.
Yeah. I want to talk further about what occurred last Saturday afternoon at Bondi and, of course, on Monday night at Wakeley. And the Attorney General is saying today that we've got a crisis of male violence. Do we have a crisis of male violence because of the way males are treated? Do we have a crisis of male violence, Craig Kelly, because we don't put enough emphasis on getting them mental help? What is the reason why the Attorney General would say such a thing?
Look, it's just trying to excuse the real problem. The tragedy that we saw in Bondi as a mental health issue. Should we be having mental health facilities? We close them all down. Should we be putting more money into mental health and having these people in institutions? That's a debate that we should be at least having.
Yeah.
The issue at the church there at Wakeley is an issue of Islamic extremism. Now, if you don't want to talk about those things, if you don't want to talk about Islamic extremism and you don't want to talk about the issues of mental health, well, then blame it's all men, violence from men. That's the way you do it. Mm. Just a completely appalling, just typical of what we would expect from these Labor politicians in Canberra.
One last one, completely different, but it goes back to climate change. And your leader, Pauline Hanson, put out a post today on X about the opposition leader in Queensland, David Crisafulli, who's likely to be Premier after the state election, agreeing to a 75% emissions reduction target by 2035. He has rolled over into the Labor camp, hasn't he?
It is. Why, if you're in Queensland, why bother voting for the Liberals and Nationals? Just keep voting Green and Labor. They got the same policies. Look, and what is 70? What can he tell Crisafulli, tell me, how much that will change the CO2 concentrations in the atmosphere?
Yeah.
And if he does, if he can give me a number, right, can he then say what it will change global temperatures? But of course
no.
He can. It is nonsense. It's just going to make Queensland poorer. Yeah. You know, and how's he going to achieve this 75%? It's a number picked out from nowhere that sounds good. Look, it is truly, Pauline Hanson's One Nation is the opposition party in Queensland. And if you want to stop the decline in living standards in Queensland, people should be voting and supporting One Nation, not the weak, woke Liberals. As I said, you must be voting Green or Labor.
I think you're right. And this is Crisafulli. This is his signature, Labor light. And Queenslanders should be aware of that. Craig Kelly, great to have you on the program again, mate. All the best for the weekend.
Thanks, Chris. Same to you.
Much appreciated. There you go, the National Campaign Director for One Nation. He put in a plug for One Nation there at the end, but rightly so, when you've got an opposition leader like David Crisafulli rolling over into the Labor morality on climate change and saying, oh, we need a 70. Who comes up with these numbers? Not scientists, because that will, what, reduce CO2 by 2035, and then what? What happens? He wouldn't know. No one knows. But what we do know is if we stopped emitting CO2 totally tomorrow, it would make infinitesimal difference to the temperature of the planet. But we'll try really hard not to make a difference and spend $1 trillion doing it. Work that out. It's insane. It is an economic suicide note. Got to take a break. I'll come back with a little bit more information for you on what's going on in Syria and also in Iran, thanks to an Israeli strike, which, as we've been telling you, is retaliation for the drone and missile strike last weekend by Iran. We'll take a break right now on TNT.
I'm CAL FIRE Battalion Chief Isaac Sanchez. And normally we like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourselves and your family safe during wildfires. But given the historic impacts that the weather has had on our state this year, we would like to provide you with tips on how to keep yourself safe during extreme weather. If you reside in an area susceptible to flooding, please take the necessary steps to prepare to evacuate if advised. Make sure you've identified at least two exit routes out of your neighborhood, as one of them may be blocked or flooded. As the weather develops, remember to check in on vulnerable neighbors and family members. They may need additional time to prepare for evacuation. And just like during a wildfire, if you feel unsafe, please evacuate. You don't have to wait for the order to come. Keep an emergency go bag ready in case you need to evacuate. And always remember to plan for the safety of your pets as well. If you must leave, never drive around roadblocks. It can take as little as 12 inches of water to sweep your vehicle away. And always remember the mantra, turn around, don't drown. Be aware of first responders working in highly impacted areas, especially on the roads. For additional safety tips and updates on CAL FIRE activities, follow us on social media or visit fire.ca.gov.
The Kids Cancer Project funds vital research into childhood cancers. And you fund the Kids Cancer Project. Funding research means giving children back their lives. And who knows what kids with cancer could grow up to do? The Kids Cancer Project. Survival starts with science. Donate now.
The Kids Cancer Project.
You're with Chris Smith
on today's News Talk Radio,
TNT.
All right, just very briefly, a Syrian war monitoring group said that Israel had conducted a strike on a military radar installation in the country. The strike hit a radar installation in western Syria, according to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. So they are saying that that is one of the other sites that have been hit. We now know that the strikes have targeted several cities, but Tehran quickly denied that it had been attacked. So you can forget about what Tehran's telling you. They have been attacked, as a matter of fact, in multiple locations. Andrew, go right ahead.
Hey, Smithy.
Dan, how you doing?
Phone box. I'm good, brother. Hey, I heard your interview there about the Great Barrier Reef and the exaggeration of numbers. Same thing's happening in the Snowy Mountains, right? The government's saying there's
Brumbies?
22,000 Brumbies. And there's only 1,900 people on the ground. These animals are being shot. They're not being killed. They're being wounded. You've got mothers dragging themselves to their foals trying to feed them. You've got stallions leading mares, their mares down into canyons and trying to get up sheer cliffs. Right. There are wild dogs, there are wild pigs coming in and feeding off these carcasses. The carcasses are laying in the waterways and polluting the Canberra water.
I've spoken to Peter Cochran, the former member for Monaro, on this, and he is absolutely, like many locals down there who know the land, they are absolutely, you know, gobsmacked by what has been ticked off on by the Minns government. It's just an outrage.
Absolutely. Mate, do you reckon you can put me in touch with him? Because I'm going to save two Brumbies, and I'm going to ride from Sydney because I can't walk anymore. The blood clots in my legs are too bad. But I'm going to ride with my dog from Sydney to Canberra, and we're going to finish what we started in 2020.
Okay, I've got your email. I'll send it via email so you can get hold of Peter. Thank you, mate. I've got to run.
You're a beautiful man.
Fabulous Friday is always a good time to play something a little bit lighthearted. And this is something special from the people who write Please Explain for Pauline Hanson's One Nation Party. And it's about Chris Bowen, the climate change minister, and his renewable revolution, except it doesn't include him. Have a look at this.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this very important press conference for Australian Renewables. Now put your hands together for Anthony Albanese, Adam Benton, Chris Bowen. Today we're investing even more money into renewable energy. Thank you very much. Mr. Albanese, what do you say to the crazy cookers that think this isn't a reliable source of energy? Please, I'll take this one, Albo. Look, as the Minister for Climate Change and Energy, I can say with absolute certainty this technology is reliable. Oh, no! Chris Bowen! Get him an ambulance! There's no time! Quick, get in the Tesla! We can rebuild him. We have the technology. Albo, what's going on? You're going to live, and you'll be 100% renewable. Oh, wow. So like the $6 million man, well, more like the $6 trillion man, but that's a small price to achieve this. The net zero bot. Zero bot. Do you get it? Chris? Do you get it? Chris? So sustainable. Oh, great. Clouds, what are we supposed to do now? Don't worry. We'll just switch him over to battery storage. All right, I'm back. Thanks a lot. Out of juice already? Okay, we'll have to switch over to auxiliary wind power. All right, look at this. I'm back. Harnessing the power of the wind. Now, let's go save the world. Now maybe we should just try on a day that's not so cloudy and still. Ah, damn it! Now what are we supposed to do now? Bowen keeps blacking out. Don't worry, Adam Bant. Luckily, I installed this little backup plan. A combustion engine. Now where are we supposed to get something to burn? Something we almost have an endless supply of. Taxpayer money! I feel renewed! Excellent. I think we're ready to roll out the net zero bot and make the transition. Yep. And if all else fails, all we have to do is stuff more money into Bowen. Let's go. We did it, Albo. The whole country's officially transitioned. All our homes and businesses, our hospitals, and all our critical utilities, all powered by the net zero bot. And all it took was an endless supply of public money. What's going on? Oh, no! No, 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 no! Where's my taxpayer money?
Oh, good work, Albo. You've officially killed the economy and left us all without power. What a bloody mess.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Senator Hanson, but I guess it's not like anyone predicted this exact scenario happening.
I did. I constantly warn you about how much money you were burning to keep the stupid net zero bot thing alive.
Oh, but we had no alternative.
Yes, you did. Here.
I feel so reliable!
Well, that's a first. Albo, you take this coal, and you use it to give Australia the cheap and reliable power it needs.
Oh, but what are we supposed to do with all this taxpayer money?
You could invest some of it into something that's actually viable, like nuclear power.
Oh, yeah?
But whatever you do, please stop shoving taxpayer money up Chris Bowen's clacker.
That is a great end line. But it's true. That's all they're doing. A whole heap of taxpayers' money thrown into schemes that will make no difference to the temperature of the planet, but it'll make us all feel better, will it? Will all those who think that they're making a difference to the environment? If only kids in schools were taught the truth. If only they were told that it doesn't matter what we do in Australia, we can make no difference to the temperature of the planet. Maybe they'll just actually work it out better than the teachers might work it out and think, well, this is an economic suicide note. Anyway, I've run out of time. I do want to just quickly tell you that the Solomon Islands had their election on Wednesday. We'll know in 2 weeks whether the president retains his job. But I can tell you, Daniel Sedani, a prominent critic of China, who was ousted as the Malaita premier, has reclaimed his seat in the province. So they'll have a little bit of opposition and a really good voice in terms of protesting against what the Chinese are up to in the Solomon Islands in future. I've run out of time. You have a fabulous weekend. Sonia Poulton is up next, coming to you from the UK, and we'll catch up again on Monday right here on TNT.